Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are finally into Jamie 7 of A Storm of Swords. I believe there's only one or two Jamie chapters following this one. So we're definitely getting into the end of Jamie's arc for, you know, what is his first book as a POV, which is kind of crazy. But Matt, big question is, how are you doing today?
Man, I am doing good. I talked to you about it beforehand. I got my COVID shot on Monday, and I am in the group of people that does experience, like, I don't know, 8 hours of like sickness,
misery
afterwards. Right. Do I think that, you know, it causes long-term effects? No. Have I experienced any long-term effects? No. You know, normally this would be fine, but now apparently people shouldn't take Tylenol. So, okay, you know, like, I mean, we don't normally talk about this type of stuff, but I, you know, it's just, you asked me how I was doing, and that's how I was doing yesterday. But you know what? I'm glad that I got it because I have a little baby, and I don't want her getting COVID.
Yeah, hey, and you got a couple problems with the old ticker over there, you know. Who knows?
Jeez. Yeah. But yeah, so
yeah,
no, it's doing good. Yep.
How's the thing on your back? The thing on your back okay?
You know, it was, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. It's my arm. Something's weird with it. I went and saw my chiropractor yesterday. He thinks I need a massage, and I got some like muscle tension going on back there or something. Sometimes I get like a cyst back there or something, and then, but yeah, something's going on where it's like my arm, man,
pinches your nerve, right?
Yeah. Like when I'm editing, cause I edit on my MacBook. So, you know, it's like my arm is like this. People that are listening can't see what I'm doing, but it's, you know, a flat hand on the ground. And so it's like this angle of keeping it up here where it's almost like, you know, perpendicular with my shoulder. And after a while, my arm just like feels like it's going numb. So I don't know if it's like a muscle thing or something's going on, but my chiropractor was like, yeah, man, I don't know. It's kind of weird. He's like, but your shoulder mobility looks fine and everything. So, So I don't know. I'm going to go get a massage in like a week and deep tissue. And
let's get Lady Teresa on the case. I mean,
dude, she doesn't care. she's ironically, she's the last person I'll ever talk to about medical advice because she's a nurse and she was an ER nurse. And so for her, it's like, are you bleeding out? Then you're fine. Okay. I once had an ear infection for like months because she was like, I think you're fine. Like, you're not, you know. And so then I went and they're like, oh yeah, you have an ear infection. I was like, well, I think I've had it for like 6 months.
So how is she with Ellie? Is she
totally polar opposite?
A helicopter mom? Okay. Oh, I was just wondering. Yeah. Okay. Matt, you're fine.
Yeah. Walk it off.
That's really funny.
Right. When I thought I was having a heart attack, she's like, yeah, but I'm having like a house party. So if you can have that tomorrow, that'd be helpful.
That's love, right? Is what that is.
And you know what? I took some aspirin and some ibuprofen and Tylenol, and I was fine.
And I was going to make, I won't make any jokes. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're feeling better, bud.
Yeah. That's all right, Matt. Jeez. It's a crazy world. Jimmy and I were just talking real world conspiracy theories here a few seconds ago. And now it's like, we got to, it's getting late. We got to talk Westerosi conspiracy theories.
I've been going to bed early, man. It's for people who don't know, it's like 8:30 Eastern. I've been going to bed at like 9:30, 10 o'clock Eastern.
Yeah,
I'm just whipped at the end of the day, dude.
This new job. You're working hard. You're golfing.
Golfing. And as long as I can, it's getting dark early now. And honestly, I've been reading a lot. I've just been
good. I've been checking out your live streams here and there. What have you been?
Well, a little bit of everything, man. I feel like I'm getting back. I shouldn't say not back in the groove, but I went through what I would consider for me to be a reading slump. I still read like 20 books this summer, but I just, you know, more out of habit. I wasn't like loving reading this past summer. I think it's honestly because I was golfing so much and like I was just so hyper fixated on that. But I also just wasn't finding stories that I was super in love with. And lately, I feel like I've been able to like really get into the books I'm reading. Like I'm reading this space trilogy called The Final Architecture by Adrian Tchaikovsky. And it's very Mass Effect coded, which I love. I love Mass Effect stories. So, you know, there's the originators and then there's the architects, and the architects are coming into these, you know, planetary systems and destroying these worlds because they want to get rid of the originators' artifacts. And you're like, well, you know, well, what are those and why do they want to destroy them? And then there's a ragtag crew that gets together and is kind of involved in all of it. It's very good. So I've been enjoying that. And I've actually been trying to read Wheel of Time again. I'm going to be honest with you, Matt. I don't like
it. Did you start at the beginning or where?
No, God, no. God, no, no.
What book are you in?
Lord of Chaos. I picked up Lord of Chaos again.
Lord of Chaos is after Fires of Heaven.
Yes, it's you after the carnival.
Hated. But I liked, I didn't finish Lord of Chaos, but that was what kind of, because that was like right when I was finishing it with Heroes of the Horn and stuff like that. And the show, and man, I did like Lords of Chaos. I thought it picked back up from Shadow Rising.
The ending is supposed to be amazing. I didn't know this until last week. Supposedly, Lord of Chaos was supposed to be the final book of the Wheel of Time, and then lo and behold, there were seven more after that. Of course.
Well, if you finish it, I will read it, and then we could talk about it or something.
We could blow the horn of Valir. By God,
I guess we could. But no, I mean, I'd be willing to. You know, we could talk about it.
Yeah, it could be fun. I'm not going to go on and on, but I just really am, especially because I read A Song of Ice and Fire each week and I read a lot of other stuff. Like, I really just don't like Robert Jordan's writing. He just loves words, dude. He will say the same thing like three different times on a page to remind you of it. And I'm like, bro, like, we got it. Like, let's move on. You know, it'd be like,
It's also hard when you're reading like the best of the best to go to much anything else. You know, it's much like how I feel when I watch Ohio State football. And now I live out here in Oregon, and you have all these people that talk about like when I'm at work, they're talking about like, oh yeah, man, did you see how we did against Oregon State? You said we did get so good. Like, you guys, shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. Okay. Like, I mean, okay. Okay, guys. All right. You know, like
Matt was just doing this hilarious thumbs up.
It's ridiculous. Okay. I mean, come on now.
You know what I respect about you, Matt? You're not afraid to ruffle feathers.
No, not at all. And it's like, I remember going into the Rose Bowl and everyone's like, oh, this is our time payback. Like, we're going to seal the deal. All that. Nah, didn't happen.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, then going into halftime, it was like 28-3. Yeah, it didn't happen. Because this week, Oregon's playing Penn State. I think they're going to lose. I'll say it right here, right now. I might be wrong.
For all our Penn State fans, we apologize. They're
going to Penn State, whiteout, night game. Okay. Good luck. Yeah, I mean, you're going to need it.
There's a lot of the Song of Ice and Fire podcasts out there. Nobody covers the range of topics we do somehow
at all in our intro segment.
Maybe to our detriment, but still, I like it. So,
yeah,
I love it.
Yeah. Anywho.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. All right. Let's there's really no news, but we're
I don't think there was any news, was there?
And we have a little Raven if we have time, but we gotta dive into this chapter. Cause man, this is Jamie. And this is not a short one, by the way. But
it's a good one, and honestly has me like I did a stream with a booktuber named Bookborn a while back, and we talked about, like, I think it was motherhood or parentage in A Song of Ice and Fire. And the whole opening half hour is me just talking about Jamie and how we forget that he's a father. And this chapter, like, made me really want to, like, revisit that conversation. So I'm excited that we're going to recap it.
Yeah. Well, I had to pull it up here. Here we go. This is Jamie 7 at at an unnamed inn on the road to King's Landing, Jamie hears that the king is dead, his firstborn son, but he is more concerned about Cersei. Jamie and Brienne have already learned of Robb Stark's demise and found out that Lord Clement Piper rode to King's Landing to bend the knee since his son is held captive at the Twins. When they arrive at the Red Keep, Sir Loras confronts Brienne, accusing her of killing Renly. Jamie reminds the Knight of Flowers that he is the Lord Commander and orders him to sheathe his sword, but Brienne is arrested and taken to a tower cell. Jamie finds Cersei in the castle sept, where Joffrey is lying in state, and shows her his stump. She asks him to kill Tyrion for murdering Joffrey, despite Cersei's words that Tyrion threatened her when she held Alaya prisoner. Jamie tells her that he wishes to learn more about what happened. He has sex with her on his mother's altar, and afterwards, Cersei calls it folly, saying that they must be more careful with their father in the castle. He responds that they should stop hiding their love and wed. Even if Tommen would lose the Iron Throne, he would still be heir to Casterly Rock, but she sends him away in anger. Jaime then visits his father, and Lord Tywin is furious when he learns that Fargo Hope maimed his son. The Hand of the King reveals that the Bloody Mummers were routed at Harrenhal, and that Gregor Clegane will kill Vargo soon, but is using him for amusement in the meantime. Tywin then speaks of his plans to bribe the High Septon to release Jaime of his vows to the Kingsguard, find a new husband for Cersei, and perhaps marry Jaime to Margaery. Jaime vehemently refuses to hear of it, stating that he is a knight of the Kingsguard and that is all he means to be. Lord Tywin turns from his son in disgust, saying, "You are not my son. You say you are the Lord Commander of the Kingsguard. Very well, sir. Go do your duty." Man, there is a ton in this chapter, especially things that imply other things. You know, one of the big theories, the Tyrion Targaryen theory, right? Like, that's one that gets brought up of, like, you're not my son. Well, he also says it to Jaime, which is another reason why I push back against the Tyrion Targaryen theory.
Yeah, well, the Tyrion Targaryen theory in most
it's just kind of aspects
is just kind of fun. And there's, like, some coincidences, which, again, this is why it's so much fun to talk about. And it's very much like our history of our world. I mean, one of the biggest things I see debated in my space is, was Shakespeare real? Or was Shakespeare multiple people? Was Shakespeare a group of women, perhaps? There's
mayhaps.
And when we can play these games with the Song of Ice Fire because of the way George has written it. But I don't think that You're No Son of Mine with Jamie happens in the show, does it? I think that is reserved for when Tywin's dying on the pot, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of like, this scene is actually different in the show. I'm trying to remember, because I think Jamie kind of forces himself on Cersei, whereas here it's not as
it's almost like he's getting rejected after this long thing.
It's like that comes kind of afterwards. I have to go back to the show to remember, but just from what I remember of it, that's different. And then I think there's a lot of Jamie Tywin stuff that is not. Like the Jamie Tywin conversation in the show in the beginning.
Yeah, he's skinning the stag.
You're right. That's not in the books.
Yeah, right. That's true. Yeah. And I think that this chapter kind of has a little bit of everything. I mean, it has a lot of, like, signposting for how much Jamie has changed and the experiences that he has. Cersei can't even begin to kind of understand, like, whenever he's talking about Vargo Hoat, like, you know, has no idea what's going on with that. But we also see his love or lust for Cersei. We see him contemplate his children for really the first time. And then we see him have an absolute blow up with his dad, there's a part where George writes and he says like the side, like no one said anything. And it was just, they just kind of stood there. And then Jamie speaks first. And you're like, you lost. Like as soon as you said, right. Yeah, like he was out waiting you.
Negotiating tactic number one, no, never speak first.
And he's like, listen, father. And he's like, nope. And you're like, oh, damn it. He got you.
Speaking of which, by the way, very early in this chapter, when they're talking about Joffrey, it's almost like the second or third paragraph here. It was the poison did the deed, the innkeep insisted. The boy's face turned black as a plum. May the father judge him justly, murmured a Septon. That is something we have seen quite often in the past, like 10, 15 chapters, is you see somebody praying to a god, mentioning one of the seven, and it often reflects what happens towards the end, right? And in this case, may the father judge him. Well, that's kind of the conversation Jamie is having, is his father, and his father is judging him. Like,
yeah,
that's wild that George has done this like over and over and over again.
Yeah, and in many ways, I think Jamie's kind of judging his role as a father to Joffrey. And, you know, we kind of had this discussion, like I said, with my friend Bookborn, and I talked about how Jamie never really gets the opportunity to be a father. And I came from it from a very sympathetic point of view of Jamie being like, you know, he really didn't have the option to be a father towards Tommen or towards Joffrey or whatever else. And he kind of reflects that opinion here, but he's also pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Like he's basically like, well, if I had to choose between Jamie and Cersei, or I'm sorry, Joffrey and Cersei, it's no competition. I can make another Joffrey, which is true, but also pretty, pretty harsh, I think.
Yeah. His kind of delusion towards Cersei is like pretty crazy. And there's a line here too I want to pull up, but really quick, I will give the show credit. I think one of the better scenes in the show that may not happen in the books, by the way, is Marcella, where Jamie goes to get Marcella, and like as she's poisoned right before he dies, he actually is telling, like, you know, kind of having this coming out and like wants to tell her everything, and like is he's making the decision like, I want to be a father, I want to, you know, and then she dies, she's poisoned.
Yeah,
like that's of all of the Dorne stuff in the show that happens, I mean it's really, you know, Jamie, but it is because of Dorne. That's like one of the better things that the, I mean, we don't know how the books will end, so we don't know if it's ultimately better or worse, but at least like I thought that was a very like powerful moment in the show.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I don't necessarily, I guess maybe I'll pose this question to you. Do you think it's because Jamie knew that Joffrey was wicked that
I think so.
You think so, like towards Tommen, you think he would be
much
more graceful. Okay.
Especially now. Right. I think for a long time it was just about him having his secret and things like that. But I think it also, you know, in this book, we begin to see he begins to realize a lot about Cersei. Like that's all coming. Like where, you know, he tells him that she's sleeping with all these other people. You know, there's Moon Boy out there, which is the one he thinks about. But we actually know she is sleeping with the Kettle Blacks
and in Moon Boy.
Yeah, possible. I mean, really,
according to our lore,
she is fact.
That's right.
But there's a line I really liked here, which I think you could almost sum up Jaime and Cersei's entire arc in a way. So it's, again, just literally like the next paragraph where he's thinking about Joffrey saying, my blood, my firstborn, my son. He tried to bring the boy's face to mind, but his features kept turning into Cersei's. She will be in mourning, her hair in disarray and her eyes red from crying, her mouth trembling as she tries to speak. She will cry again when she sees me, though she'll fight the tears. His sister seldom wept, but when she was with him, she could not stand for others to think her weak. Only to her twin did she show her wounds. Then there's like, you know, a little line after that, but I thought that was a very interesting, because he is going to show her quite literally his wound, which is his hand cut off.
Yeah, man.
And
she kind of rejects it.
She does kind of reject it. And at the same time, it's like Jaime is far more loyal to Cersei than Cersei is to Jaime. For as much as she talks about it, yeah. I mean, she's the one sleeping with Lancel and the Kettle Blacks and Moon Boy. And
I don't know if they were equally yoked at one point as far as like commitment to one another. it would appear so, but things changed when he left for war. And I think as he came back, one, obviously she, it sounds weird, but she's not being faithful to him, but like she probably, yeah, like it's weird because it's her brother, but he also has changed too, right? And he has a moment where he's kind of like he almost reflects on Brienne and like what she would think of her. But then also I think that he takes some sort of like comfort in the fact that Brienne knows what he's just been through, right, and did not judge him for his hand, you know, being chopped off. And Cersei could never know that. And she, and also she doesn't know it. She doesn't care.
Yeah.
You she know, has no interest in it.
And you, and we'll see this when we get to Feast for Crows, but Jamie's, I would have to do like the deep dive to like, you know, pull up the analytics, like with the Search of Ice and Fire. But I would have, just from what I, you know, just reading, Jamie thinks of Cersei way more than Cersei thinks of Jamie in her chapters.
Yeah.
Way more.
Yeah. From what I can remember. Yeah. And if anything, I mean, she's always just so, she's never charitable to not a single person she thinks of in her head ever.
Yeah. But if you look, I mean, if you look at her arc when Jamie goes to war, like when he actually goes off and leaves her, I mean, a lot happens and she's kind of on her own for all of it. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, she's there taking care of getting, you know, getting Ned Stark and Robert Baratheon out of the way. She's there when Stannis takes over the keep. She's there when Joffrey dies.
Yeah. And
Stannis almost, you know, he doesn't take the keep, but when he almost does in battle.
Yeah. And she's thinking about, we're going
to
take the,
she has to deal with, she has to do with Tyrion. And
yeah, like it's hard to be sympathetic towards Cersei because she's so maddening, especially in like Feast. You read her and she's just insufferably like dense at times. However, you can see where she needs to be defended. One, she's, this is a very misogynistic world, right? She is a woman. She can only do certain things because of that, even though she feels like she's more Tywin than any of her brothers. But on top of that, I mean, she is forced to marry someone that wishes she was someone else and never is really in love with him and is forced in his bed. I mean, it's pretty haunting stuff. It's not an easy life to live. Maybe it is compared to people in Flea Bottom, what they go through, of course, but like, I'm just saying she's been dealt some pretty raw deals as well. And she kind of has to maneuver all this stuff for her as well, unless if she just wants to trust, you know, Tywin to take care of her, which obviously he's a terrible dad, so he's not going to. So I guess, you know, it's not surprising that she might end up making some of the decisions that she does or treating people the way she does. Obviously, she's still responsible for her actions ultimately. But yeah, I think there is sympathy for her.
Do you think Jamie ever had a moment with her like he did with Brienne about being killing the Mad King? Because when Jamie has that and he's like crying, it feels like he's saying it for the first time.
And so
I don't think he ever did.
I don't think he ever did either.
So I think that's like a big deal, which I think is something that makes the Brienne Jamie arc so interesting and powerful. And in a way you could say, well, Jamie is also like, whether it's emotionally cheating or whatever, he is kind of doing it, you know, with Brienne.
He's being vulnerable to another woman, which obviously if he's ever been vulnerable to a woman, it would have only been to Cersei for sure. Right. And also Brienne can relate because she is too labeled a Kingslayer. So
yeah,
It's a connection that even if he had done it with Cersei, I don't know if anyone else could understand quite like Brienne can.
Yeah. And so I just like, I was thinking about that as I was reading this. It's like, I don't think he probably ever did.
Yeah.
Cause it seems like, and the show does
great. Phenomenal. Yeah.
Amazing, you know, but yeah, it's just like, I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. I think that might have been the first time he ever got it off his chest. And he kind of always just went along with like if been people mocking him or accusing him, he just kind of always like, you know, did the tough guy thing. Like, yeah, so what? So what? And I think you get to see the cost it had on him whenever he talks to Brienne. So there's almost a whole new side of Jaime that Cersei never got to see born while he was out in the field and obviously taken prisoner and then have his hand chopped off. And when you go through something traumatic with someone, there's a connection. Just is the way humanity works.
Yeah. Okay. So let's pull up some other things here. So kind of interesting too, you know, Sir Loras is here. Mm-hmm. And when they go and they meet Sir Loras and he sees Brienne and he's saying all these things, and man, you know, talking about shadow magic with Melisandre and stuff like that. It's just like, oh yeah, you kind of forget about it. It's so weird because it feels like magic is only really brought up in certain people's chapters, but here it is brought up in this one.
Yeah. And we spend so much time talking about the human elements that we just did. We also forget that there happens to be, you know, fireballs and dragons and shadow magic and blood magic and all kinds of things.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting too, you know, so just some of the back and forth they have here, because Jaime tells him, hey, I'm the Lord Commander, you know, and he immediately comes in and he starts telling Meryn Trant and all these people off. He's like, well, you guys lost another king, which is true.
Yeah.
I mean, like, wow, you guys are doing a bang up job. Since I left, you guys have lost two kings without me.
Yeah. Makes you wonder if they'll lose some more, possibly.
Yeah. Or just how good is this Kingsguard? I mean,
yeah, right.
You start running the stats. I mean, this might be the worst Kingsguard ever.
Is it the worst Kingsguard ever?
It might be.
It has to be.
I mean, they've lost two. I don't know what the numbers are, but how quickly do two kings die within? I don't think there is a scenario in which two kings die in the same year, essentially.
So unless if it's, I'm trying to think, like House of the Dragon era, I guess that was still not.
No, because Aegon, and then I guess it kind of goes back and forth, because like Aegon and then Rhaenyra takes it. Spoilers, I guess, for the, you know.
Yeah, well. And also, if you think about the Mad King, which is probably like one of the biggest debacles in Westeros, you know, regency, even then, like Barristan goes into Duskendale and saves him. Remember, he questions if he should have done it at all, but that is the Kingsguard's duty. So like, you can't really point to the Kingsguard then and say, oh, they're kind of shit. Like, it's just, I don't know. Jaime's out in the field. He's gone. And then Barristan throws his sword down to Joffrey's feet. I mean, you can make, you know, this is like the rebuilding of the franchise, and they're in the bad years. They're collecting
In the Browns years.
Hey.
Well, if you're in the Browns years, you never get out. Okay. Yeah,
trust me, I know.
So, anywho, so it, yeah, it is kind of interesting though. You know, you see this little back and forth. So another knight in white armor was guarding the doors of the Royal Sept, a tall man with a black beard, broad shoulders, and a hooked nose. When he saw Jaime, he gave a sour smile and said, and where do you think you're going? Into the Sept. Jaime lifted his stump to point. That one right there, I mean to see the queen. Her grace is in mourning, and why would she be wanting to see the likes of you? And then, you know, he thinks, because I'm her lover and her father, who in seven hells are you? A knight of the Kingsguard. You'd best learn some respect, cripple, or I'll have the other hand and leave you to suck up your porridge in the morning.
Ooh.
Oh, that probably did not feel good.
That's a stinger.
Yeah.
that's like a bang job.
Yeah. So then he says, so instead of saying I'm the Lord Commander, he says I'm the Queen's brother, which I think is interesting, because he could have said, actually, I outrank you. I'm the Lord Commander. But I think even though it's a small line there, right? I think that's a pretty powerful and impactful moment from Jaime, because he knows that's a knight of the Kingsguard, but he chooses to say, I'm the queen's brother, not I'm the Lord Commander of the Kingsguard.
Well, and you know when this is really interesting, Matt, because it seems like at this stage, he's almost taking the Lannister position, right, to his advantage. Maybe as the reader, we could suggest, well, maybe he is done with the Kingsguard. Maybe he just wants to be next to Cersei. Maybe he wants to start assuming some duties of the house. But then at the end of the chapter, he doesn't go that way. And because he says,
Cersei kind of says no.
Yeah. Well, in Tywin, he says, Tywin, I am the Lord Commander of, you know what I mean? And
right.
So he actually almost renounces that to Tywin. So you could almost say there's maybe some sort of like subconscious eternal, maybe it's conscious eternal struggle with him of what is he?
Right. So, yeah, but I just think it's interesting because immediately everyone knows that the queen's brother is Sir Jaime Lannister, the Kingsguard. You know, it's obviously not Tyrion because he's, you know, in jail. And so, I mean, even you would immediately know that that's, you know. So then he says, you know, the white knight thought that funny, escaped, have you, and grown a beard as well, my lord, his other brother, Dolt, and the Lord Commander of the Kingsguard. Now stand aside or you'll wish you had. you know, the dolt took a long time this time. It's Sir Jaime. He straightened my pardons, my lord. I did not know you. I have the honor to be Sir Osmond Kettleblack,
who is
banging the queen,
clapping cheeks.
So is he freaked out because it's Jaime Lannister, or is he freaked out because he's like, you know, because everybody I think knows
it's the queen's brother's lover. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, a little awkward.
Yeah,
Eskimo brothers.
Still, I think that's a pretty interesting line. I am the queen's brother. That's his first. It's his first.
Is there a chance that he was worried that if he said he was the Kingsguard, that they would challenge him to a martial combat and that he couldn't do it?
No, I think it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you're walking and then somebody says something and you say something immediately in response.
Yeah, it's like what you
truly see yourself as. So I think that is just the first thing he thinks of.
Ooh, okay.
So yeah. I don't think it was like a, you know, you're having a conversation where you're like, you know, hey, people are going to be throwing things at me and I think it's just a, like, that would be like your first.
That is what response. His instincts tell him. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I like that.
So anyway, it continues on a little bit and then Sir Osmond's taken a little back, not back door, which he was taking with Cersei, but Cersei was kneeling before the altar of the mother. Joffrey's.
Oh my God.
Joffrey's laid out beneath the stranger who led the newly dead to the other world. The smell of incense hung heavy in the air and 100 candles burned, sending up 100 prayers. Joff likes to need every one of them too. So then Jaime comes in, she sees him, you know, she did not come to him. However, you know, she always waited to let Jaime go to her. That's pretty. She's never really the one seeking Jaime out. It's always the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely the unbalanced equation between those two at this point.
Yeah.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
A mochi moment from Tara, who writes, "For years, all my doctor said was eat less and move more, which never worked. But you know what does? The simple eating tips from my nutritionist at Mochi. And after losing over 30 pounds, I can say you're not just another GLP-1 source. You're a life source. Thanks, Tara. I'm Myra Ahmed, founder of Mochi Health. To find your mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Tara is a Mochi member compensated for her story.
Why? And then she said, and so as soon as he comes, she says, "You should have come sooner," she murmured when he took her in his arms. "Why couldn't you have come sooner or keep him safe? My boy, our boy. I came as fast as I could." He broke from the embrace and stepped back a pace. "It's war out there, sister. You look so thin, and your hair, your golden hair, the hair will grow back." Jamie lifted his stump. She needs to see. This won't. Her eyes went wide. The Starks. No, this was Vargo Hoat's work. The name meant nothing to her. Who? The goat of Harrenhal. For a little while, Cersei turned to gaze at Joffrey's briar. Buyer? I don't know. They had dressed the dead king in gilded armor, eerily similar to Jaime's own. The visor of the helm was closed, but the candles reflected softly off the gold, so the boy shimmered bright and brave in death. I'll skip ahead a little bit here. "He killed him, Jaime, just as he's warned me. One day when I thought myself safe and happy, he would turn my joy to ashes in my mouth," he said. Tyrion said that? Jaime had not wanted to believe it. Kinslaying was worse than kingslaying in the eyes of gods and men. He knew the boy was mine. I loved Tyrion. I was good to him. Well, but for that one time. But the imp did not know the truth of that. Or did he? You know, why would he kill Joff?
Yeah, and right here is the part one of the most important scene in Tyrion's arc, which part two is obviously at the end of the book, where Tyrion lies as Jaime gives him the truth. And my God, like, seeing it from this point of view, you can tell how bad Jaime doesn't want this to be true. He really doesn't believe it, but also he harbors some guilt.
Yeah.
For doing such a cruel thing to his brother early on. I mean, Jaime's such a complex character, because in this chapter, I think he's kind of abhorrent for being like, I can make another Joffrey. By the way, I mean, we'll get to, but I mean, he has sex with his sister next to his dead child's body. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah.
It's insane. So yeah. Like, he's clearly a despicable guy, but also whenever he thinks about that, and you can say, oh yeah, he does have guilt. Like, he's not like a sociopath. He has some sort of compassion. It's tough. It's tough, yeah. Also, because you feel bad for him for losing a hand, and the way Cersei kind of dresses him down, like, you look thin, your hair, and then the stump. And
it's a pretty one-sided relationship, to be fair.
It feels that way, and it sucks, because I always like seeing it from like a pretty new, and I've already said what I said about Cersei and why she would be this way, but you almost wish you could have seen more of like Cersei and Jaime beforehand, you know what I mean, to see if it was different. I have a suspicion maybe it wasn't any different than this.
Yeah.
She always kept him running. She's clearly very good at this. Like, it's a game she plays.
Yeah.
Moon Boy knows all about it.
Yeah, clearly. Okay. So, as you know, I did like this line, actually, because it's kind of, you know, when she's saying, I love Tyrion, I was good to him, which, of course, you know, that's Jaime, right? Well, but for that one time, but the imp did not know the truth of that, or did he? Why would he kill Joff? That's Jaime. It's like, internal monologue. And then the first thing Cersei says is, for a whore, he told me he was going to do it. She's thinking it's Aliaya instead of Shay, mm-hmm. which was, you know, the thing. But the whole deal was Tysha. So yeah. Immediately Jamie's thinking this, and Cersei says, for a whore. So George doesn't go into it, but if you were Jamie in that situation and you heard it, you'd be like, what? Because you just literally thought he did not know the truth of that.
Yeah. Or maybe he did. And then she says this, right.
and then it goes in its other direction. It's just such a cool, because it doesn't dive into it at all, but on like a reread and all this stuff, or like if you were, you know, an actor reading this and trying to get into character and stuff, like, it's just such, it's like,
it's really well written.
It's just another one of those like George masterpiece level, you know, it works on like 15 different levels lines.
So, and the reason why it works is because each character has their own distinct interpretations of events in the history, right? We are not told one narrative. We are told how different people see different things, like the slaying of the Mad King, for example. Each person has their own goals, and each person has their own biases. And like, every character gets to digest this information. Like, so the fact that that sentence can mean three different things to three different characters is so crazy. Like, that's good writing, in my opinion. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So it's utterly insane. Okay, so it continues on. There's going to be a trial. You know, I was lost without. Then she goes, I was lost without you, Jaime. I was afraid the Starks would send me back your head. I could not have, you know, I could not have borne that. She kissed him, a light kiss. But he could feel her tremble as he slid his arms around her. I am not whole without you. There was tenderness in the kiss. He returned to her, only hunger. His mouth opened for his tongue. No, she said weakly when his lips moved down her neck. Not here, the septums. You know, the other can take the septums. And so, you know, his hand slides up, you know, starts tearing her clothes away. Hurry, she whispered now. Quickly, you know. But I'm pretty sure in the show, maybe I don't know if I can pull up the scene, because they don't really show it in the scene. I think it's one of the cuts away. I think she's like saying no, and he just like kind of takes it.
Yeah, and I wonder, do you think that she's also aware that he probably feels guilt and she's kind of cashing in on that?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
She's a manipulative bitch.
she certainly can be.
I mean, I don't know how else to say. I mean, I'm a big Cersei defender, but at the same time, I mean, she totally, you know, plays Jaime like a fiddle.
And she is using, I mentioned earlier about that misogynistic environment. She's kind of using it to her advantage, which, touche.
Yeah. Okay. And so, you know, then we can go ahead and move into the Tower of the Hand scene where he's having the conversation, which isn't a very long conversation, by the way, with Tywin. You know, and what do you think of this, Jimmy?
I mean, I just think it's like one of the most tense conversations. I mean, if you really look at the events of this chapter, it's really just two conversations, maybe three. Also, Baelin Swan shows up. Baelin Swan's the man. But the fact that George is able to have two very different conversations, but those fill a quite long chapter and it feels so satisfying, is like top tier dialogue. But I think this Tywin and Jaime conversation is really tense, really tense. And you can feel it off the page. And that's why I was like, oh, I kind of want to see this scene with Charles Dance. And then I realized it just didn't really go this way. And I'm like, oh, that's unfortunate. They missed an opportunity here.
Right. Well, by the way, Jaime asks how it was done. Poison. This is Tywin talking. It was meant to appear as though he choked on a morsel of food, but I had his throat slit open and the maesters could find no obstruction. Cersei claims that Tyrion did it.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that it was not the pie that was poisoned.
Could be.
He just didn't. Possibly. It just wasn't him choking on the pie. It was not like he actually physically choked on the pie and died.
I mean, it also kind of feels like they're going to go with whatever they can to get to blame this on Tyrion. So whatever, like, who knows if that's actually what they found? We don't know.
Also, the fact that he had his, it's like, the dude, he's dead.
Yeah.
Why would you have his throat slit open to check?
I mean, that
also
is...
if it's just crumbs and stuff, wouldn't it dissolve?
All right.
I don't know how that all works.
Does it actually dissolve?
I don't know.
Can I reach a little bit here?
Yeah.
Part of the mountain is going to be part Joffrey. No, I'm just kidding. Is there a chance that Tywin is talking super crass about this to see how Jaime reacts to gauge if Joffrey was in fact his son?
See, that's the whole deal. I think Tywin knows, but he refuses to like accept it.
I think he has a good hunch. Yeah,
right. I think it's one of those things where it's like, I think it's one of those things where sometimes you know things like in life are bad and terrible, but you just like are so set in your ways that you refuse
to move on.
You refuse to believe it. Like, you know deep down that it's like, you know, the worst thing, right? Because I think that's like how Tywin would view it and be like, oh god, like the fact that his kids,
everything comes crumbling down for the Lannister family. Yeah. He literally can't acknowledge it.
Right. So yeah, I think that's just where he's at. Where it's like deep down, he knows like it's bad, you know, to him. You know, then you get into the whole discussion of like, well, is it bad? You know, the Targaryens do it, and we kind of are like, okay, you know what I mean? Like, it's
Matt, you're Ohio showing.
No, I don't think it's good, but it's how George writes it. Cause, you know, when it's Targaryens, we're like, all right, you know, but when it's everyone else,
I have never been like, yeah.
Dude, whatever, everyone was cheering when John and Danny got together. Everyone's like, yeah, let's go. Well, it's like, different. Dude,
what is like different? Aunt.
It's different because how? Because it's his aunt. His
yeah, come on now.
Okay, I guess. You know, I'm just saying, dude. Well, I people in West Virginia, your neck of town, and Alabama, they're real for it.
Listen here, buddy. All right.
Okay.
We have to keep it in the family.
Yeesh. But anyway, you know. So, yeah, but I think that's just where he's at, you know. I think
it's also super tragic for Tywin because it's his only remnants of his wife that he lost that he did love.
It is also his grandson.
Dude, he's like, I slit my grandson's throat open. Seems everything's okay. It's wild.
That's wild. And I wonder why would he do that?
I think that's one kind of how they did things in the medieval stages of medicine. But also, I don't think Tywin cares. I think he's really.
No, I mean, I guess I just wonder, like, what does he stand to gain from that? Does he stand to gain that it to show that it's poison and he tries to pin it on somebody other than Tyrion? Because he does not want Tyrion at the end of the day. He doesn't want him to die.
You don't think so?
No, he still sees. I think he still sees value in him, which is why he wants to at least send him to the wall.
Oh, so you believe that he wants to send him to the wall?
Yeah, I don't think Tywin wants to kill Tyrion.
Oh, see, I think Tywin was going to have him killed. I think Tywin despises Tyrion. Like, I think he genuinely hates his guts. Because remember, Tywin thinks that Tyrion is who killed his wife, which, I mean, technically is true, right? Actually, isn't that?
I think he hates Tyrion, but I think at the end of the day, he's still a Lannister, and I think Tywin views that as more important than anything else.
I mean, you have an argument for sure.
Because at the end of the day, unless he can, from Tywin's mind, obviously he doesn't think Tyrion's going to kill him. The only thing I can think Tywin is, that'd be a really interesting, what was his plans following like Tyrion's trial?
I don't think you can send somebody who killed their kin and a king to the wall, though. Like, I think they got to go. That's the two worst sins in this world.
Yeah.
That's tough. I will say this. You have a case for sure. Like, because
I guess my thought would be, what is Tywin's plan? Obviously, he dies. But what is his plan for post-Tyrion's trial? So let's just say either way, Tyrion is killed or Tyrion is sent to the wall, right?
Oh, he's sitting on that throne.
What's his plan?
He's the regent while Tommen comes of age. Easy.
And then is he going to have another son? Is he gonna?
He's gonna try again.
I mean, that's the. I mean, well, I mean, what's his plan to carry on the Lannister name, or to just force Jaime out and say, "Nope, we're gonna kick you out of the Kingsguard, and you're gonna have to marry somebody."
I mean, he can lean on Jaime, but I mean, Tommen really is the continuing line. But I guess Tommen's a Baratheon technically,
right? Which he may actually believe he is.
Yeah, I mean, even if he's not, again, he can't acknowledge it. So it's
because otherwise, then you hand the Lannister name to like Kevin Lannister.
What if that's what he was up to with Shay? He was trying to make another Lannister.
Could be,
but he's had all this time to do this again. And he couldn't have been under.
He never
the,
does.
Yeah,
I think it's because he always viewed Jaime to be the.
He thought Jaime would stop playing soldier and eventually do the right thing.
But plus Tyrion could have given him an heir at some point. And with as many people as Tyrion has slept with, it's possible there are many heirs out there.
Yeah. Where's that theory at?
Yeah. How many women has Tyrion slept with?
Yeah. Little Tyrion.
By the way, real quick, just cause we're almost at the end of this chapter here. This wasn't the theory I want to talk about in our Raven. If we have time, but I did see a theory that we should discuss at some point where somebody was making the argument that the reason that Aegon the Fourth sleeps with so many women is because he was just trying to have as the highest percent chance of creating like the prince that was promised as possible. Yeah, it's like how Rhaegar is like, there must be a third, and you know, Aegon the Fourth's like, well, I'll just have as many as possible. That way, one of them will have to be, you know, the prince that was promised.
That is not true, but I love it. I love the effort behind that.
Well, he must have put a lot of effort in.
I kind of wonder. No, no, that's not true. No, I was trying to go there. It's just not. No,
like he read the Song of Ice and Fire prophecy, and it was like, from my line, the hero
with
will
respect.
Come.
With
so I will just no make chance. My line There's as no large chance. As possible.
It's a big line. It's quite the line.
It's huge. I mean, technically speaking, he named all of those people his heirs, so any person could come forward and say, I'm a Targaryen king, technically speaking.
That is insane.
How many people? We'd have to trace that line. That'd be an interesting one to try to trace. How many?
You need a lot of paper.
Well, and there's only so much that George has written, but it could be kind of interesting to see.
Maybe it has a role to play in Winds of Winter.
Yeah, like an army of Targaryens. Okay, anything else? on this chapter. Real quick, kind of back to finishing up some of our Purple Wedding stuff, is we talked about Marjorie and like, oh, you know, Olenna Tyrell's plan. I mean, Tywin Lannister's plan right now is to say, well, we're going to marry you to Marjorie.
Yeah.
But what if Jaime had said yes? I mean, of course, the Tyrells could have said no, but that's a pretty hard no to say publicly, because now you're like, again, marrying Jaime Lannister. We'll say he's no longer a Kingsguard member, but he is the heir of Casterly Rock.
Yeah.
And a prince, because he's the queen's brother.
Dude. Also, Tywin, sick move, dude. Like, sicko move to try to get Jaime to take Joffrey's wife. Like, that's pretty low. Pretty bad. And he's like, come on, she's a maiden. You're fine.
Well, they get Tommen to take her.
Why not? You know, why not?
I mean,
Marjorie clearly doesn't mind.
I mean, she's Joffrey's uncle. Or she's actually at one point Joffrey's aunt. Technically speaking, you know, as far as the realm is concerned, she's Joffrey's aunt for like a day. And then
that's so true.
She's Joffrey's wife, which would make her. So she's Tommen's aunt, Tommen's sister-in-law, and then Tommen's wife. Okay. All right. Do we have time to do a quick little raven here?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So one of the things, Jimmy, I've been diving into some of the stuff with like the Corpse Queen and stuff like that. And I've been thinking more about her in terms of like exactly like what was she? Right. Because, you know, a lot of people think she was an other, but we've never seen a female other. And if she was, how did she get beyond the wall? So I type this up here. So one of the most mysterious figures in Westerosi legend is the Corpse Queen, the pale woman said to have bewitched the Night's King. Some claim she was a White Walker with skin like the moon and eyes like blue stars. But if that's true, how did she cross the wall, which is bound by ancient spells to keep the others out? That puzzle alone has led many to argue she wasn't an other at all, but perhaps a wildling sorceress. Maybe she was an agent of the Great Other itself, or even tied to the powers of the Three-Eyed Crow, sent to corrupt the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. And yet, maybe the truth is just simpler. Legends grow in telling, and it could be that the story of a wild sorceress was later embellished, her image twisted, and she resembled the others we fear from the north. What we do know is this: she and the Night's King were powerful enough that House Stark and Joramon, King Beyond the Wall, had to unite to bring them down. So was she truly an other, a sorceress, or just a myth made darker by centuries of retelling? The mystery of the Corpse Queen lingers, and with it, the question of who or what she really was.
So we have talked about this from a different angle. We talked from the Craster angle, but this is something pretty different.
Yeah.
Do you feel as if there's a chance that this is going to play parallel to Val?
I've seen that argument. Is that ultimately what the Corpse Queen's story is that it will play a parallel to Val, in that it's this wildling woman who could perhaps like enchant and, you know, entrance Jon Snow. The problem is that Jon has already died. And when he is resurrected, like he is in the show, we already know. I mean, we think George could still make him like keep the Lord Commander, but the whole deal is until you die. So that's like the cool part about it, is that, well, I have died. So now I am no longer bound to this oath, which is alone, by the way, pretty sick.
That's just such
a cool like way to do it.
It's really good.
So yeah, I mean, then you kind of lose out on the, it's like dark and evil part of the story.
Yeah.
So I guess I look into it more of the idea of, it's like, I don't know, is it like the dark version of like Nisa, right? Azor Ahai, stabs her, the sword comes out. And so maybe it was the other side doing it. Because we still don't know if the Three-Eyed Crow is good or bad.
Right.
We think. I mean, there's a difference between the Three-Eyed Crow or like an agent of the The Great Other. However, that's all going to play out, because when we look at Brendan Rivers, we're like, I don't know, man. It's not as cut and dry as we think. Like, it could be a much darker thing in the books. Could end up being the villain of the whole thing. Like, we don't know. I mean, the show could have gone in a very different direction. It's very likely that it did, to be fair. So it could simply be, maybe she was a wildling who crossed the wall, and for whatever reason, this, you know, if she's there, and maybe she sought refuge from the others, but maybe the members of the Night's Watch viewed her as evil, because ultimately we're not supposed to like wildlings, which John does. He allies the Night's Watch with the wildlings, which is part of the reason they kill him. Right. So it could simply be something like that. And then it turns into a myth over time.
I mean,
or maybe she was like a wildling sorceress, or maybe she wasn't. Maybe she truly was another, which is why she was so pale and all the stories are just not legend, but true.
Could have came from the land of always winter.
Yes,
perhaps. I like the myth. I like the
I think that's the most logical
one. Yeah. And it also feels very George-esque to do something like that. But we have to always give room for fantastical elements in the story, because they are there, especially in the past. So you can't really rule out being a wildling sorceress or being from the land of always winter.
So, I mean, what do you think happened to where it got so bad that the Stark of Winterfell himself couldn't just go put it down, but had to unite with the king beyond the wall to say, hey, we got to put an end to this. Like, because how exactly does that work? How do you actually unite with the king beyond the wall to take out a castle that is on the wall?
Yeah, dude,
that's like the
that crazy, actually that's, suggests that that's she's something way more.
Exactly. Like, that's like the craziest part about this whole story is, like, that's part of the deal. When they talk about Castle Black and all of these things, they say, like, well, an attack from the south, they're not set up to be able to defend themselves from attack,
right?
Which is the whole reason, because they are to defend the things that come north, which is on the wall. So how does that happen? Exactly. Yeah, you know, like,
the real story there.
Does the Stark of Winterfell do something to help them come south of the wall and then attack that way? And then they, for whatever reason, they decide to go back beyond the wall. Like, that, I mean, that's the craziest part about this whole myth and legend of the Corpse Queen. Damn. and the Night's King is, like, it's so mysterious. And how did they, like, how does the Stark of Winterfell be like, you know what, let's call the king beyond the wall to put this down? Why doesn't he just call other, like, the crown and say, hey, we got a problem up here?
Well, you know how the crown is. The crown,
for sure.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's some respect between the Starks and beyond the wall. Like, there's something there. Maybe they have more in common than, honestly, the Starks and King's Landing.
Were they doing something that was causing the king beyond the wall to be like, hey, we need to put this down?
That's what I'm thinking. It suggests that whatever the Corpse Queen's up to was so dire that we have wildlings and the Starks fighting together. Like, that is,
it's one of the most crazy, like, little pieces of lore in all of the A Song of Ice and Fire history and legend.
Yeah, dude.
It's just like this alliance of the King beyond the wall and the Stark of Winterfell had to come together because of what the Night's Watch was doing.
Then you could always go with, like, was there a chance the Corpse Queen was the king beyond the wall's daughter and she ran away and he wanted her back? Like, you could do that, but I don't think that would really track with why they weren't be able to just, like, go get her. Like, you could just go get her.
Because early in a Game of Thrones, and it's actually one of the craziest parts about a Game of Thrones, like, the first five chapters, Mance Rayder is mentioned in almost every chapter. And Ned Stark himself says, I'm hearing so much rumblings about this king beyond the wall, Mance Rayder. I may have to go put him down.
Yeah.
Which is one of, like, the sickest little, like, pieces of information in those first five chapters of Game of Thrones. I mean, you know, now that we know ultimately who Mance Rayder is and everything. But, I mean, so clearly they must be somewhat in tune about what's going on north of the wall.
Yeah, there's some back and forth there, for sure. Like, there has to be some, like, an emissary or something. Or maybe they're just sending ravens.
Yeah, because I mean that's who the Night's Watch would send Ravens to. But I, you know, I would imagine that the rest of the Night's Watch, the people at other castles, would are like, hey, this is like a we got a bad situation. But they're in power for like a decade.
Yeah, they are. And like what was changing during that time? I don't know, dude. But that feels major. That feels like big White Walker lore drop right. coming.
And like maybe it is just as much as like she was anyone. Maybe they went to like, you know, one of the local towns, like, you know, the Castle Black has like Molestown, right?
Or yeah.
And like there's brothels there. And maybe he just found someone he wanted to make his wife. And also maybe that's part of the lore, right? Because, you know, the timeline gets kind of weird when you look back at it too, because it's also like, you know, when you read the timeline, it's not totally set up to where like it's like sometimes it looks like the wall was created before.
Yeah, you can't tell like what's like chronologically
which came first, the Night's Watch or ages. The yeah, it's like yeah. Hold on a second. Yeah, so you never know. It's kind of an interesting thing, but maybe we'd like that's why what caused them to say, all right, nobody's having wives.
Possibly. Yeah.
So
man,
so anyway.
Now I will say we talk a lot about like what needs to be answered. That one might need to be answered.
A myth, legend. I don't know that we'll ever get anything more on it.
Well, who knows? Maybe the Corpse Queen is kicking. Maybe Val is the Corpse Queen with a glamour.
Like somebody who's like super old.
Ooh.
No, I think Val is ultimately just John's Dario.
Yeah, probably.
But then you look at it and you think, well, he already kind of had that with Ygritte.
Because
Ygritte was also a wildling. So now you have this other wildling.
But yeah, but Ygritte could also be the Khal Drogo in some ways, right? Because like took his virginity, just like Drogo took Daenerys's, right?
I guess.
Yeah. Hate. They also went from like hating each other to becoming lovers. Just Daenerys at first hates Drogo, so like that could be a parallel, possibly.
Yeah.
So maybe Val is just Dario with longer hair.
For John.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anything else? Just on that little.
No, sir.
Yeah. Just kind of interesting to think about. Okay, well, with that, I want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. Our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 63. I'm actually not 100% sure if I changed that or not, so it could be Chapter 64, but it is certainly Davos 6.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
We will see you next time, and remember that winter is coming. So she's Tommen's aunt, Tommen's sister-in-law, and then Tommen's wife.
That's a lot of genres on the old hub.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. I'm gonna have to edit that out. That's we've said a lot of crazy shit in this episode, but that's too far.
I thought it was pretty funny.
It was very funny, but I'll have to edit that out. Or maybe not. Maybe I'll just leave it.
I think you should leave it.
Jesus.
Oh, man. Good times.
This is what happens when we record later at night.
It is. I get loopy, dude.
we become more R-rated.
Yeah, bend the knee after dark. It's incredible. Dark.
Jeez.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
A mochi moment from Tara, who writes, "For years, all my doctor said was eat less and move more, which never worked. But you know what does? The simple eating tips from my nutritionist at Mochi. And after losing over 30 pounds, I can say you're not just another GLP-1 source. You're a life source. Thanks, Tara. I'm Myra Amit, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Tara is a Mochi member compensated for her story.